The Lost Girls by Jennifer Wells. Read by Lizzie Schenk and Rachel Atkins for Saga Egmont. Agnes, 1937. Prologue. It had been 25 years since I'd last seen the face of Iris Caldwell. I had never expected to see her again, yet the flickering grey figure that glowed from the whitewashed wall of the church hall that evening was definitely Iris. She wore the long white gown of the May Queen, but the paleness of her complexion and her long fair hair were dulled to grey by the age cinefilm, her steps reduced to jerky movements, as if she were no more than a marionette controlled by the hand of the projectionist. This was all that was left of Iris, an object captured in light and shadow. But my own memory of Iris had not faded. And at that moment, I recalled the girl with the determined spirit and strong will as she had been back in the spring of 1912. Iris crossed the village green in stocking feet. Behind her, I could just see the dark outline of the maypole, its ribbons still tied, and the long shadow cast by the oak tree. On May Day 1912, Iris should have been Missensham's May Queen, but she would never walk in the procession or wear the willow crown. And now, I watched her 25 years later as she walked with just one other, a man in a cloth cap, whom she leant against as he led her across the grass. Yet it was Iris's face alone that held my gaze. At 15 years old, Iris Caldwell had been young and beautiful, but 15 she had remained, because after May Day of 1912, Iris Caldwell was never seen again. Iris's face gave away nothing of what had happened to her on that morning, or what was to come. But for just a second, she raised her head, as if she had heard a noise or could sense something in the air. I felt her eyes connect with mine, as though she could see me, as I sat on my wooden seat in the cold church hall. I fancied that she could see past my aging body, my thinning hair and slackened skin, and recognize me as the woman she had once known, even read my thoughts and memories, as if she gazed out at me from the afterlife. At that moment, there was nothing more than Iris. I no longer felt the hard wood of the fold-up seat, the throb of my arthritic fingers, or the chill from the old window panes. The silhouettes of the people seated in front of me mingled into the wavering light, and the murmurs of the audience and the rhythmic clicking of the projector sank into silence. It was not only me who recognized Iris, because as her face appeared on the screen, the people became still, as if the room itself was taking one large breath. Then a name was whispered. Her name. Iris Caldwell. It was repeated quietly over and over, the words rippling across the room. Heads turned towards me, faces darkened by the glowing screen, wisps of hair caught in the beam of the projector, the grey flicker mirrored in dozens of spectacles. Then another word. Murdered. Then a hand was raised in front of the screen, the shadowy finger pointing to the man Iris walked with, the man who would now be accused. The people shuffled in their seats, chairs grating on the floor. They looked at each other with wide eyes, hands held up to open mouths, and whispered in each other's ears. I stood up quickly, the chair falling from under me. I fought my way to the aisle, pushing past knees and handbags and tripping over feet, the leaves of the oak tree quivering across my jacket and the spindles of light almost blinding me. I headed for the door, my legs threatening to buckle beneath me.